Hey guys, welcome to episode 16 of the Mysterious Benedict Society Read Aloud Podcast, Book 4. Today we'll be reading chapter 16, but first a recap of chapter 15. The Society, including Ty, all jumped from the plane number 2 is piloting, secretly and safely, onto No Man's Land Island. Rennie almost got pulled away by the wind and would have landed in the ocean, if not for Kate's grappling hook, with which she reeled him in. They hid their parachutes and were soon scouting about the old institute, now known as the Keep, using Mr. Benedict's instructions to find a way inside. They did encounter some drapeweed, though, and remembering the old traps, were extra careful in their footing. Soon they could think of no other way in than to have Kate parachute down a vent and simply open the door from the inside. At the last moment before Kate opened the door, though, the others thought there may be an alarm. Turns out there was, and it went off. Sticky quickly disabled it, but it was too late, and Constance told them that they were coming, and it wouldn't be long. So that's the end of the summary, guys, but I wanted to thank Alex so much. They informed me that they gave me a 5-star rating, and that just made me smile so much. It's incredible. So thank you so much, Alex. It means the world to me. I hope everyone is having an amazing day, and enjoy the episode. Chapter 16. Into the Keep. Across the still night beyond the hill, over the water, a powerful engine started up. It rumbled loudly for a few seconds, then went abruptly silent. Not in the usual manner of an engine shutting down, but as if it had simply vanished. All was still again. "That's the salamander," Sticky said. "They activated the noise cancellation device." "Why didn't they turn it on before they started the engine?" Ty asked, clutching Kate's bucket as Rennie ushered him into the passage. "Great question," Kate said. "If Crawlings was responsible, that would explain it. McCracken's always getting on him for being careless." "I think it was McCracken himself," Rennie said grimly. "I think he wanted to send us a message." Kate narrowed her eyes. "Toying with us? Mocking us for setting off the alarm?" "And letting us know he's on his way," Rennie said. "What a jerk," Kate grumbled, applying herself to a heavy crank near the door, which rapidly slid closed. "Can you reactivate the alarm?" Rennie asked Sticky. "Not this one. I had to permanently disable it with the universal shutdown code, a sort of digital skeleton key. Mr. Benedict included it in the schematic. I think the regular codes must change every day, like the one in the guardhouse." "Why would he make it so easy to disable?" Constance asked. Sticky started moving down the passage and gestured for them to follow. "I wouldn't say it was easy. I had to enter a string of 23 digits with no pauses between them." Ty, lunging at Kate's bucket with one hand, began punching numbers into an imaginary keypad with the other. He counted under his breath. After a dozen or so, he shook his eyes wide. The passage was cold, dimly lit, and featureless. After a short distance, they passed the doors to the elevator, which Kate said was of the clackety-clack metal cage variety. "It rises up along the wall, giving you a view of everything," she said. "I've never seen such a big indoor space." "Enormous doesn't come close to describing it, but it's entirely empty. Very weird." "I want to see it," Ty said. "Maybe later, sport," Kate said, for they were hurrying on. At the end of the passage, they came to a closed door. This one was a regular door, built of wood painted gray with a plain-looking doorknob. "Great, now what?" Constance said. "Let me work my magic," Sticky said, cracking his knuckles. Then he simply turned the knob and pushed the door open. Constance rolled her eyes. "There shouldn't be any more obstacles until we reach the control room," Sticky said. "Only a rather long walk. Kate, do you want to give Ty a ride?" They hurried down passage after passage, several of which gave onto other passages and closed doors. Just finding the way to the control room would have been a major obstacle itself, if anyone other than Sticky had read those blueprints. As it was, Sticky had only to follow the map in his mind, and the others had only to follow him. "If I'm right about that cavern being a secret assembly area," Sticky said as they hustled along, "my guess would be that we're passing through an old storage space. All these rooms would contain different parts that would get sent down to the assembly floor by way of the elevator." "What's in the rooms now?" Ty wanted to know. Kate opened a door at random. "Looks like dust and spiders," she said. They hurried on. "That one takes you to what used to be the memory terminal," Sticky said, indicating a door on their left. "We're getting close to familiar territory now." "Right," said Kate, who had an unerring sense of distance and direction. "We're just east of what used to be the classroom building." "And several meters below, of course," Sticky said. "Of course," said Ty, just to be involved. Unless they came to a door with a sign over it, secondary control room. It too had a simple knob, and with a somewhat dramatic, "Here we go," Sticky turned the knob and shoved against the door, only to thump it into it and bounce back. With a sheepish look, he tried again, this time pulling on the knob instead of shoving, and the door opened toward him. "Here we go," he mumbled. The room was small and simple, a single desk, atop which stood a computer and some kind of control board, two security camera monitors mounted on the wall above the desk, and a second door currently closed, One of the monitors displayed a view of the front plaza and the bridge in the distance beyond it. Both were unoccupied. The other monitor showed the interior of the security door that Kate had opened to let them in. It was still in place. If the 10 men had reached the island, there were no sign of it on the screens. Sticky slid into a chair at the computer station. Okay, according to the gold key, there's an obvious first step now. Which is what? Constance demanded, although Sticky had clearly been about to explain. Sticky bit his lip, took a breath, and recited. First learn all that you can learn. Unlocking with the code will burn your chances of return, and blocked will be your road. Constance made an angry noise. Another code? What code? How many codes are there anyway? I don't know, Constance, Sticky said, making an effort to speak calmly. The gold key presents a kind of riddle we have to solve here, and I'm assuming the answer is the code. I can share the riddle in a minute, but can we agree that the first I should race through whatever I can on this computer? You know, learn all that I can learn? Fine, Constance said, just hurry up. Sticky glanced at the others for confirmation. They all nodded, especially Ty, who did so with great enthusiasm. While you do that, Rennie said, why don't I run through all the security camera views? Whatever they have to show us is another thing we can learn, right? They all agreed, especially Ty. And Rennie took the chair next to Sticky. The control board operated the security cameras, as Rennie had correctly guessed, and in no time he had scanned the system and figured out how to work it. There were dozens of possible views to be displayed, and each camera could also be repositioned or made to zoom in on a particular frame. Rennie's first move was to redirect the camera overlooking the plaza, scanning left and right and below for any sign of the baker's dozen. Finding none, he began to switch to views provided by other cameras. I'm in the system now, Sticky murmured, and Rennie looked over to see him paging rapidly through screen after screen of information, schematics, computer code, and great blocks of text, some of it in different languages. There's an awful lot here. It could take me an hour to get through everything. What's it looking like out there? No sign of them yet, said Kate, who, like all the others, were studying the monitors. The screens were now revealing views of long, empty, almost identical corridors. It's the old classroom building, Constance said. How depressing. So strange, Kate murmured. Yes, Sticky said, still paging through screens on the computer. The classroom building now appears to be the administration area. It's being renovated for use by general staff, guards, medical personnel, and so on. They should have plenty of room, Rennie said, and more empty corridors appeared on the monitors. I remember thinking that there must be miles of tiles here. You weren't wrong, Kate said, and some led to the old helper's barracks behind the classroom building. Is that where the security suites are located, George? Sticky tapped his nose and pointed in her direction without taking his eyes from the computer. He paged quickly through a few more screens and turned in his chair to face them. Okay, time is short, so let me tell you what I know so far. It's enough to form Plan A. If we end up having more time, I can keep digging and maybe come up with a better one. Rennie switched back to view of the front plaza, still empty for the moment, and left it there. They all kept an eye on it as Sticky continued. Between the blueprints I saw in Mr. Benedict's house, he said, and what I've just learned here, I have a sense of how the keep is laid out. There are several layers of security. Think horizontal layers rather than vertical ones. The first is the water, of course. Then you have the exterior of the buildings. And the traps, Ty reminded him. And the traps, Sticky acknowledged. But the walls of the buildings themselves have been fortified, along with the windows and doors, and they're all rigged with alarm systems that will radio distress signals to the main line if there's any attempt to break through them. So that's the second layer of security. The third is a system of barriers that are triggered in different ways, Sticky said, rising from his chair. He went to the door through which he had just entered, pulled it closed, and pointed to a ceiling above them. See that little gap between the doorframe and the wall? One of the barriers is up there and will drop down like a guillotine if it's triggered. It's made of glassanium, as clear as glass, as strong as titanium, and it doesn't have a lock or security code. In case of an attempted break-in or breakout, all the doors to the different sections of the keep get sealed off with barriers like this one, and they stay that way for 24 hours. That allows plenty of time for security forces from the mainland to arrive in sufficient numbers and assess the situation. Rennie gestured at the monitor displaying the keep's front plaza. So if the 10 men break in through the front entrance, then this barrier falls, Sticky said, as will the barriers of every other entrance in the section of this keep. So they won't be able to get to us, Ty asked hopefully. The barriers would definitely slow them down, Sticky said. I don't know how many calculator bombs they have, evidently not many, and it may take more than one to blast through a barrier. Their laser pointers won't be of any use because the barriers don't have locks or door handles to burn through. They could probably burn a few tiny holes, but what could that do them? What if they burn hundreds and hundreds of tiny holes, Ty asked. They could make a big hole. Smart thinking, pal, Kate said, but the laser pointers are only good for a single shot, and they don't have many of those either. Phew, Ty said, and it was suddenly apparent to the others that he had actually been anxious about the answer. Kate stepped over and put an arm around him. So what's the bad news? Constance asked. The bad news, Rennie said, is that Mr. Benedict is in a different section of the keep. Exactly, said Siggy. The section we're in includes this secondary control room, the old classroom building, and the secret passages leading up to it. Mr. Curtin's security suite is in the old helper's barracks. You're saying that the moment McCracken tries to break in, we're going to be sealed off from Dad? Constance cried. What are we waiting for then? We have to run! Siggy grimaced. We can't just run. First of all, what if we didn't make it? There's only one entrance to the barracks, and it's not exactly close by. And it's a security door that requires a code. And just to get there, we'd have to pass through three other security doors that require a code. Constance threw her hands in the air. So that's what a riddle is for. We solve it for the code. Let's get on it. McCracken's getting close. I can feel it. Everybody instinctively squinted at the monitors. Still nothing outside. Listen to me, Constance, Siggy said, fixing her with a steady gaze. This code from the riddle will have to be an override code rather than a normal one, which changes every day, and using an override code will drop the barriers. It's another emergency measure. Constance looked ready to scream, but she squeezed her lips tightly together, balled her hands into fists, and said nothing. Okay, then, what's plan A? Asked Kate. Siggy turned to the monitor control board, scanned it, and flipped a switch. One of the monitor displays changed, showing a long, empty, dead-end corridor. Siggy pressed a button that zoomed in toward the dead end. High up on the wall, painted in the same neutral color as the wall, and therefore difficult to make out, was a small electrical panel. The security cameras aren't the only thing we can't control from this room, Siggy said. I can also drop the barriers myself, but I can't just drop one. If I enter the command, there's a 10-second warning, and then all of the barriers fall. Here's our loophole, though. The Brax entrance, the security door with the barrier over it, is on the other side of the wall with that electrical panel, which just so happens to control the mechanisms for that barrier. So we can disable it? Constance asked. Not exactly. The barrier will fall if we try that, but we can rewire it to think it's already fallen. If we do that, it won't be triggered when McCracken breaks into the facility. We can also use the override codes to get through all the security doors between us and the Brax. The overrides won't drop the barrier either. Because it will already think it's down, said Constance. Right, Siggy said. I mean, it would be nice to have that barrier between us and the Tin Men once we get into the barracks, of course, but... We can, Rennie said. Listen, after Kate rewires the barrier so it won't be triggered, the rest of us can figure out the code and use it to open all the security doors except the last one, the one in the barracks. Then we'll hold the doors open for Kate. There are enough of us, right? If we don't let the doors close, we won't have to re-enter the codes. Kate rewires the barrier again so that it can be triggered, rejoins us by way the doors were holding open for her, and then, when we use the override code to get through the final security door, that barrier would drop down behind us 10 seconds later, Siggy said. Yes! Great, let's make this happen, Kate said, rubbing her hands together. George, if you'll just show me where the electrical panel is, I'll get going. Siggy pulled up a schematic on his computer. Okay, before you can even reach the corridors, you're going to have to run up all these ramps to the next level of secret passages, which is right below the old classroom building. Then you'll have to follow this passage all the way around the perimeter. Siggy traced his finger along the edges of the computer screen. Until you reach these stairs here. That's the only way you can get to the corridors where the electrical panel is. Roger that, Kate said. Siggy pulled up another schematic, this one showing the classroom building corridors. They resembled an extremely simple maze, rather like a rectangular version of Natalia's shell, with dozens of corridors running parallel to one another. See the security door here, he said, pointing at the bottom of the right screen. Once you've rewired the panel, the rest of us can use the override code to get through this door. Take this long, straight shot, passing through two more security doors near the Windway Point, and then all the way to the final security door, the entrance to the barracks. But first, you're going to have to go down every single one of the order corridors to get to the electrical panel, which is right here. He pointed to a spot near the top of the right screen. Kate whistled. This is turning into quite a little jaunt. Yes, it adds up to about 2.5 kilometers. You won't have to come all the way back to our starting point, though. Rennie had the right idea. But we'll actually only have to hold open one door. This one here. Siggy moved his finger slightly lower on the screen. See, it's close to the barracks entrance. That will be your shortcut. Once we open that one for you, you can rewire the panel and meet us there. Perfect, Kate said. Now what should I expect of the electrical panel? Siggy pulled up another schematic. Need me to explain it to you? Kate peered intently at the screen. Nope, this will hardly be the first time I've rewired a control mechanism, you know. Easy peasy. During this time, as Kate and Siggy were conferring, Constance had been staring with greater and greater intention at the display at the barren front plaza. Something wasn't right, and she suddenly realized what it was. They're going to the back door! What? Are you sure? Kate asked. Oh boy, that does make sense, Rennie said. He quickly switched a monitor to display the interior of the back door, still closed. It's out of view of the mainland, after all. I guess they knew about it from their days at the Institute. The question is how they'll handle it. He switched to a view the group hadn't seen yet. That of the Carnivia space Kate had jumped into. It was truly amazing, like the interior of the largest cathedral in the world, if only the largest cathedral in the world were 10 times as big. Rennie used the controls to zoom in on one corner of the ceiling, where the metal cage elevator Kate described was plainly visible. It looked bizarrely like a jail cell attached to the ceiling, with the doors that opened on either side. A few meters away from it was the bottom of the duct through which Kate had dropped before deploying her parachute. Rennie felt a queasy again just imagining it. "At least it's empty for now," Kate said. She turned to Ty. "Hey, you saw how high up on that wall the electrical panel is, didn't you? I have the tools I need, but I don't have a stepladder. Do you have any ideas?" Ty's eyes widened. "You need your bucket." "Now that," said Kate, "is an excellent idea." Ty eagerly handed her the bucket, and the sight of her strapping it to her hip with her utility belt was surprisingly comforting to everyone. "Okay, I'm off," Kate said, going to the door. She threw it open to reveal a long series of ramps leading to a higher level. The sight of them gave her an unexpected shiver, for they triggered vivid memories of the way Mr. Curtin had rocketed along in his demonic wheelchair. How very frightened it had all been to all of them. She turned to her friends, who could tell from their faces that they were having the same unpleasant recollections. "What's that?" asked Ty, who was looking not at the ramps, but at the monitors. Everyone's eyes followed his pointing finger. In the opening of the bottom duct, something was moving. Rennie checked the controls. The camera couldn't be zoomed in further, but as it happened, there was no need. A pale, bald head emerged from within the duct, an upside-down face, followed by an upside-down body in an elegant suit. Soon the entire figure of Crawlings, right down to his shiny black shoes, hung suspended beneath the duct, twisting slowly from left to right. A line on the monitor looked scarcely thicker than a thread, was tied to his ankles. He resembled an elongated spider hanging by a strand of web. As he dangled there over the abyss, Crawlings casually buttoned his suit coat and tucked his tie into it to prevent it from falling into his face, which, because of its inverted state, appeared to be frowning. In fact, Crawlings was smiling. "What are they going to do?" Constance whispered. "No way they'll just happen to bring parachutes, right? Will they blast open the door?" She squeezed her eyes closed, trying to search her way to the answer. "We don't have much time, Kate," Rennie said. "I'm on it," Kate said, and she was gone. The others watched as Crawlings made a signal, and it was drawn upward into the duct again. "They have a different plan," Constance murmured, her eyes still closed. The listener was afraid of the explosion, but then McCracken said something and made her less afraid. "Can you read McCracken's thoughts?" Rennie asked. Constance shook her head. "Not from here. If I could see him, maybe, but..." She was silent a moment, then opened her eyes. "Sorry, no." "That's okay," Rennie said, still looking at the monitor. "I think we have our answer." Crawlings was lowering into view again. In his hands was Kate's crossbow. "The grappling hook," Constance cried. "Kate forgot her duffel bag." Sure enough, in the next moment, Crawlings fired the grappling hook at the bottom of the metal cage elevator. The security cameras were not wired for sound, so there was no telltale twang or clang, only the unhappy appearance of a taut cable now stretching from Crawlings to the elevator. With an almost careless gesture, he reached up and released his feet, then swung in a graceful arc to the wall beneath the elevator. He began to climb. Smoothly and swiftly he ascended, until he was clinging to the exterior of the elevator cage. He withdrew something from his pocket. A bright red light appeared on the elevator door, and then Crawlings was inside the elevator. A moment later, he was out of sight. "He's just going to let them in through the door," Stiggy said, "just like that." Rennie switched the monitor to display the interior of the security door. Crawlings stood before it, speaking into a walkie-talkie. Constance had her eyes closed again, focusing on the listener. McCracken's angry. He didn't want Crawlings to waste a laser pointer getting into the elevator. Now she's scared there's going to be violence. "She definitely doesn't know them well enough yet," Stiggy muttered. "She's also not warding me off. She's scared and confused. Her defenses are down." "Why isn't he opening the door?" Ty asked. On the monitor, Crawlings checked his watches. He shook his head and crossed his arms. Then he simply stood there. "They're worried about the sirens," Constance said. "They don't realize the alarm's deactivated," Rennie said. "Something else, too. They're setting something up," Constance said. "She doesn't quite understand it, but when it's ready, Crawlings is going to open the door. And they are going to come in after us at top speed. She's really focusing on it because she's afraid of what will happen. McCracken is talking about the secondary control room. He's sure that's where we'll be, and he knows the way here." "Of course," Sticky said. "They've all been here before, including her." Rennie, doing his best to seem calm and unworried, had put an arm around Ty's shoulders. "It took us a few minutes to get from that door to this room," he said, "and we were hurrying, and they'll be much faster than we were." He considered a moment. "I think once Crawlings lets them in, they'll be here in 2 minutes tops." "George," said Ty, looking very nervous now, "could you please use the computer to drop the barrier thing over the door before they get here?" "I will, Ty, I promise," Sticky said as calmly as he could. "The trouble is that when I enter the command, the barriers over the barracks entrance will fall too. He's got out his walkie-talkie. Kate, what's your status?" A few seconds passed before Kate replied, her voice loud and tiny against a background of rapid footsteps. "Believe it or not, I'm just now reaching the level below the corridors. My bucket handle came loose at the top of the ramp, and my bucket went crashing all the way to the bottom again, so I had to go after it. I honestly can't believe this. Never happened once in my life. Has Ty been fiddling with the screws or something?" A quick glance at Ty's face told everyone in the secondary control room that Ty had indeed been fiddling with the screws or something. It's okay, Tyron, he said, trying not to panic. He had his own walkie-talkie out now. Stand by, Kate, he said. I mean, keep running, but stand by. Roger that. Okay, let's think, Rennie said. If we have to drop the barriers before Kate rewires the panel, we're stuck in this section. Krongs is going to open the door for them in exactly 6 minutes, said Constance, who was scowling with her eyes closed. Even as she spoke, they saw Krongs check his watches again. Rennie spoke into his walkie-talkie. We have 8 minutes, Kate, maybe less. A pause, then. Roger that. I can do this. Rennie looked at Steve, who was shaking his head and murmuring to himself. George doesn't think she can make it, said Ty in a thin voice. Stiggy met Rennie's eye. It's 2.5 kilometers. I don't know of any official world records for that specific distance, but I know the ones for 2,000 meters and 3,000 meter races, both indoors and outdoors, men's and women's. Please hurry, Rennie prompted. Right, sorry. The best I can do is take a kind of complex average, and that would be about 8 minutes, Rennie. But keep in mind that those are record times set by world-class athletes, running on tracks with track shoes. Kate's wearing boots. And carrying a walkie-talkie and a bucket, said Constance with a look of despair. And when she gets there, she has to rewire the panels, Rennie said. Sticky shook his head. She can't do it. Nobody could. It can't be done. For several seconds, they all went silent. Ty tugged on Rennie's hand, and looking up at him with wide eyes, he whispered, Is there a plan B?